28 April is World Day for Safety and Health at Work. And in the lead up to it this week, the International Labour Organization released a global report on the impact of climate change on worker safety. Manal Aziz is the ILO's team lead on occupational safety and health and the lead author of the report. Manal, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Hello, very happy to join you.
This report offers what's described as critical evidence about six key impacts of climate change on worker safety. Could you run us through some of those key impacts?
Yes, sure. So what we saw is we have obviously excessive heat, and this is something over 2.4 billion workers globally are suffering, are exposed to around the world at one point in their working lives yearly. So that is causing detrimental effects on their health, like cardiovascular disease and respiratory disease and many other health and death. But we're also looking at solar UV radiations, because many times many of these exposures are not siloed. They're really an accumulation of different hazards that we face in the workplace. So solar UV radiation touches 1.6 billion people globally as well, and overlaps with some of these workers that also suffer from heat stress. We're also seeing that air pollution, so also outdoor workers mainly that are exposed to air pollution, this comes to exacerbate the effects of the other hazards as well. And beyond that, we see that there is a change in the pattern and seasonality of vector-borne diseases like malaria, rabies, dengue. And so they're starting to show in places they never showed before. So we're seeing a rise. And we know that there are over 15,000 work-related deaths due to some of these vector-borne diseases for outdoor workers. And this in turn leads to the increase in use of toxic pesticides. So we're seeing more pesticides that because you need them to be now more efficient against certain pests. And so workers are exposed to a lot of these hazardous chemicals that are used in agriculture mainly and some other farming practices globally. And we see that over 300,000 pesticide poisoning deaths are happening on a yearly basis because of that. And this is not to mention, and I know that, you know, Australia is not foreign to extreme weather events. So we're seeing a high rise in wildfires, flooding, hurricanes, major industrial accidents. That's also taken a toll on the health and lives of workers globally in a number of sectors and regions.
So yes, a very complicated picture that you're seeking to track. And you have, as you say, pulled together data on how much of an impact these different effects have. At the same time, you also say the scientific evidence base for a lot of these things is limited in many critical areas. Could you explain what some of the limitations on the available information are?
Yeah, definitely. So, I mean, the way we measure a lot of these exposures, obviously, is linked to climate change models and testing temperature across a long period of time, but also looking at some meta-analysis in public health and others too, understand the attributable factor to occupations in all this. So we're trying to isolate the work-related exposures and impacts. So we do have a good methodology to detect exposure. We also have good registered data on deaths. The thing is with heat stress and heat stroke and some acute injuries, what is really reported is, you know, cardiovascular disease. And sometimes it's not necessarily linked. Oh, this happened on an extremely hot day where the worker was not acclimatized, etc. So you dig into detail on, you know, how we can be sure that this is attributable to the workplace, how this particular respiratory or cardiovascular disease is linked to exposure over a number of years. And this is the occupation sort of the person. But there is available data. Some of the data in the report is new data that's never been seen before, and this is what we worked on. But obviously, this is complemented by existing reference data over the years. This is, you know, these are issues that are not new, air pollution, UV radiation. But now when you look at them from the increases in temperature globally and how they're being exacerbated and how much more exposure there is, we see a 35% increase in 20 years of temperature-related health impacts and deaths. And if you even account for the increase in the labor force, you're still with more than 8.8% of people that were not facing these problems in 2000, who are facing them now in 2020 and beyond.
Is it possible, say, in the area of excessive heat, to tease out the impact in terms of workplaces of differences between when it's directly caused by medical harm, you refer to heat stress and that sort of thing, versus say something like increases in accidents due to the fact that the conditions are very hot and presumably fatigue is greater.
It is. And that's why, I mean, for this particular report, we stayed a little bit global with the global estimates, but we have ongoing work and we're hoping to launch a more background detailed report on heat, excessive heat and heat stress in July, where we will break down more precisely some of these global estimates, because obviously the 22 million non-fatal injuries due to excessive heat and the nearly 19,000 deaths due to excessive heat today include immediate injuries, mostly immediate injuries for outdoor and indoor exposure. So they do include everything from heat strokes and immediate dehydration results, but also include, because we test for how high the temperature was over a period of time. So it does include work-related transport accidents after a very hot night of no sleep. And, you know, and there's increases in mental health issues, irritability, depression. And those are detailed also in meta-analysis in public health studies over decades. So the numbers can further be segregated for more detailed on what is direct injury and what is indirect.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Manal Azi, who's the ILO's team lead on occupational health and safety, about their report on the global impact of climate change on worker safety. Your report has some really fascinating analysis of the different regulatory responses around the world to excessive heat. Are there any that stand out to you, or ones in particular that seem to be especially effective?
Some of the key measures countries have been taking are at the, you know, legislative level. And that's mainly in terms of excessive heat, setting maximum temperature exposure at the workplace. And they're looking at, you know, low intensity, medium intensity and high intensity work. We're also seeing legislation around setting breaks that are mandatory for workers during the hottest times of the day. We're seeing regulations around providing clean water, hydration, which is not a given for a lot of these tropical countries or countries where temperatures are very high. We also see, for example, you know, some employers are required to provide sun cream and proper personal protective equipment that is maintained and that workers are actually trained to use. So those are really important that they're covered in legislation. And then you have the whole medical surveillance part of all this, that these are regular medical surveillance for the prevention and recognition of some of these diseases that we're talking about, especially for UV radiation and heat and air pollution, because that's necessary to take immediate action. And more importantly, I think we need to be listening to the worker so the worker can pace themselves. If the worker feels, you know, this is too hot to work, there needs to be a setup and management system in place that allows for the worker to stop the work they're doing without retaliation. Because a lot of these injuries and deaths are preventable. And most of the time it's because, you know, nobody's listening to the worker and how they're reacting. And different workers react differently depending on how acclimatized and used to they are to the heat. So there are so many measures at that regulatory, but also collective bargaining. Unions globally are very active at sectoral level and in certain occupations to make sure that they fight for protections from some of these hazards. And we have great examples globally, especially sometimes where the legislation is not up to date or not yet as protective as possible. And the idea mostly is that occupational health and the health of workers need to be at the heart of some of our public health initiatives and environmental climate change responses. But we need to not forget the 3.4 billion workers that are in the front lines of some of these hazards as we're facing these climate changes.
Yes, indeed. And you mentioned Australia's grim familiarity with increasing extreme weather events. I notice also that in the area of UV radiation, and your statistic is that about almost 19,000 work-related deaths due to non-melanoma skin cancer each year. And Australia shows up as one of the hotspots in this category also due to ozone depletion.
Right, exactly. And that is one of Australia's biggest problems. But I know that there's a lot of skin cancer prevention programs in Australia and so many different initiatives targeting and early detection. of skin cancer and lots of recommendations for employees and employers to be very wary of this. And there's so many initiatives, some smart initiatives in the state of Victoria, giving proper advice on ultraviolet radiation and training workers, especially in those sectors that are most exposed, like construction, agriculture, fisheries, people working in transportation. And these are people exposed on a daily basis to this UV radiation.
Just finally, Manal, what are the next steps for the ILO in terms of addressing the challenges of climate change for worker safety?
So the ILO is tripartite. So our worker organizations, employers and governments, mainly ministers of labor, have decided to get together in 2025. The date is not yet decided, for a tripartite global high-level debate on the impact of climate change on workers' health and extreme weather events and changing temperature patterns. And that would likely come out with global policy recommendations at the very least, if not a call for an international instrument that can guide regulations globally around this issue. But meanwhile, we're producing the necessary research, gathering the necessary data of good examples globally at the policy level, but also workplace level. Because yes, some of these actions and interventions and prevention management systems don't necessarily yet understand the full picture of all of these hazards at interplay. So we need to continue to gather enough research to advise the 2025 global meeting that will hopefully come out with global policy recommendations on how we can manage some of these hazards. But part of all of this, and this is the excellent work of the media as well, is to shed light that, you know, this is happening. Here are how many billions of workers exposed. They are struggling daily to make their voices heard. Their suffering is unnecessary because some measures do exist and legislation needs to step up to protect our workers in a number of these sectors.
Manal Azzi, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra.
Thank you so much.
Manal Azzi is the ILO's team lead on occupational health and safety and the lead author of the ILO's global report on ensuring safety and health at work in a changing climate.
ABCRN helps you understand the world. Find more of our stories on the ABC Listen app.